Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program number 705, Update on 9/11 and Related Matters. This program is being recorded on March 14th of the year 2010. Before we get into the main body of the broadcast, I want to call listeners' attention to a new feature on the SpitfireList.com website. That is the website of yours truly. It now has my entire life's work up on that website for download for free. And I'm now in my fourth decade of broadcasting. It's all there, and the only thing you need, only investment one need make is one of time. There's a new feature, there's a new software now that I've been using for that website, and there's a new feature that I call food for thought. For many years on these broadcasts, I've been using a category I call food for thought and grounds for further research. In the upper right-hand corner of the front page of the SpitfireList.com website, there is a little box called Food for Thought, and that is an article that I update many times every day, certainly several times a week. And listeners should get in the habit, those of you who only check the website periodically for the broadcasts and or description, should get in the habit of checking the website daily, because I update the Food for Thought often daily, always now, several times a week. When I put up a new Food for Thought article, the preceding articles, begin feeding down the left-hand side of the front page of the website. When they are finished there, they go into the news and supplemental section. So if you go to the right-hand page and see there's a feature there where it says select category. You click on that and you scroll down to where it says news and supplemental. Click on that. You'll see all of the preceding articles as well. So for those of you who only check that website for new broadcasts and or descriptions, please get in the habit of checking it on a regular basis, because I update the Food for Thought almost daily, certainly several times a week. There are a lot of amazing articles. Sometimes I'm going to be incorporating those into broadcasts. There will be several articles in this broadcast that have also been in the Food for Thought and News and Supplemental categories, but often they will be the News and Supplemental and Food for Thought articles will not be included in a broadcast. So please do get in the habit of checking those. For example, just a couple of days ago, Spiegel, the mainstream German publication, noted that the BND, the German intelligence service, has decided to keep its files on Adolf Eichmann secret for another 50 years. Well, Eichmann was executed in 1961, almost a half century ago. One wonders why it would be necessary to keep those files secret for another 50 years. And indeed, the probability is very strong that it's because of the links between not only Eichmann, but his subordinates and superiors to the mainstream focal points of power in the United States and around the world. And indeed, an Argentine author of a book called The Real Odessa speculates about much the same thing. So please do get in the habit of checking out the Food for Thought section. Check SpitfireList.com every day. That website is by far and away the best source on this earth for this type of information. And again, it's got my entire life's work, and I'm now in my fourth decade on the air, up on that website for download for free. Okay? All righty. Now, updating September 11th and related matters. I haven't done this in some time. I've got tons of information. There's no way that I'm going to be able to get it all done in this broadcast, so there'll be an upcoming program shortly in which the material that I've not been able to include in this broadcast will be downloaded. Let's start with this particular story. This is an ABC News story, Dateline September 10th, 2009. It's by Brian Ross and Vic Walter. It's headlined, FBI informant says agents missed chance to stop 9/11 ringleader Mohammed Atta. Subtitled, undercover operative, quote, 1,000,000% positive, unquote, attacks could have been prevented. It reads in part, On the eve of the 8-year anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, an FBI informant who infiltrated alleged terrorist cells in the U.S. tells ABC News the FBI missed a chance to stop the Al-Qaeda plot because they focused more on undercover stings than on the man who would later become known as 9/11 ringleader Mohammed Atta. In an exclusive interview to be broadcast tonight on ABC World News with Charles Gibson and Nightline, former undercover operative Ali Assad says he spotted and became suspicious of Atta in early 2001 when he was sent by the FBI to infiltrate a small mosque outside Miami. Atta was there with Adnan Shukrujaman, an Al-Qaeda fugitive who now has a $5 million U.S. reward on his head. There was something wrong with these guys, Assad, a 36-year-old Catholic native of Lebanon who pretended to be an Islamic extremist, says, skipping down. According to Assad, Shukrujaman, whose father ran the mosque, invited the undercover FBI operative to meet him at his home, but the FBI told him to stay away. Instead, Assad says the agency assigned him to set up and sting what he calls wannabe terrorists, ending any hope of infiltrating the real Al-Qaeda terrorists. Former National Security official Richard Clark, now an ABC News consultant, said the case is, quote, yet another example of the way the system broke down prior to 9/11, unquote. If the system had worked, Clark said, we might have been able to identify these people before the attacks. Well, there are a number of things to contemplate here. First of all, the Bureau has been concentrating on stings of wannabe terrorists. In the next broadcast, updating 9/11, we're going to take a look at what, for lack of a better term, might be called leaderless jihad, something of an adaptation of the leaderless resistance strategy that has been adopted by Nazi and white supremacist groups, and indeed various imams associated with the fascist Muslim Brotherhood, and also internet sites with those same kinds of connections have been encouraging Muslims to go ahead and perpetrate attacks. So leaderless jihad and some of the elements promoting that are something we're going to talk about in the next broadcast. We're going to touch on it briefly here. But what I want to note is the fact that, well, we're going to touch on several things in connection with this article. First of all, as we have heard in most recently our interview, our most recent interview with John Loftus, the vast majority of FBI special agents are very honorable men and women. But much of the top leadership of the FBI has been badly compromised. In early 2001, Louis Freeh was still head of the FBI. We now know that he was deeply in bed with Saudi interests, was deflecting information pointing towards the Saudi elements as the authors of the Khobar Tower attacks in 1996 in the direction of Iran, which was not the author of those attacks. And now Louis Freeh is the defense attorney, now of course retired from the FBI. He is the defense attorney for Prince Bandar, a member of the Saudi royal family, the head of the Al-Yamamah slush fund, and an individual so close to the Bush family that his nickname was Bandar Bush. As I noted in For the Record 310, aired on a sister station WFMU right across the river from Ground Zero, the night before the attacks. I recorded the program in early July of 2001. It aired on WFMU on September 10th, 2001, between 6 and 7 p.m. Robert Mueller was appointed head of the FBI. He had previously, shall we say, proved less than vigorous in a number of investigations that relate to September 11th, including the bombing of Pan Am 103, and there are evidentiary tributaries running between that and the milieu of September 11th, and most notably the BCCI investigation, which was badly attenuated. I speculated in that broadcast that the appointment of Robert Mueller to head the FBI was basically to see to it that the BCCI milieu would not come under further investigation, because when one begins investigating the BCCI milieu, one comes across the links between George W. Bush and the Bush family and the Bin Laden family. They are business partners, and the Bin Laden family had much to do with helping to establish and perpetuate Arbusto Energy and some of George W. Bush's other failed Energy Ventures. Eventually, when the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids took place, many of those raids, in addition to the FBI, were conducted by the Secret Service, which is under the direction of the Treasury Department, and Talat Otman, who was a director of Harkin Energy, one of Bush's failed oil ventures, and also the operating, basically the managing director of Grover Norquist and Karl Rove's Islamic Institute, interceded directly with then Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill on behalf of the institutions and individuals who were busted on March 20th, 2002, for in what was the largest terror funding bust in the United States. That milieu that was busted on March 20th of 02 is inextricably linked with not only the Muslim Brotherhood per se, but the bank Al-Taqwa, headed up by former Nazi intelligence operative Youssef Nada, founded, according to Ernest Baca's, arguably Europe's top authority on money laundering, by none other than François Genoux, a key Nazi operative who was not only the banker to the Grand Mufti, but also the heir to, check this out, the political last will and testament, and collected literary works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. And the milieu raided on March 20th, 2002 was inextricably linked with the bank Al-Taqwa. It was also inextricably linked with the Republican Party, Grover Norquist, Karl Rove, the Saudis, the Muslim Brotherhood, and the Bush administration, and Talat Otman, who was a director of Harkin Energy, who was a close personal friend and political advisor of both Georges Bush, who gave a Muslim benediction at the Republican convention in 2000, and who was a director of Harkin Energy, was a protege of Gaït Faron of, surprise, surprise, the BCCI. He also, that is to say, Talat Otman, was also a protege of Abdullah Bakshis. I'm not sure about the pronunciation, B-A-K-S-H-S. He was the business representative in the United States of the Bin Laden family for many years. Last seen, as near as I can tell, anyway, the last reference I have seen is the aforementioned Abdullah Baksh, was working for, surprise, surprise, a Halliburton Oil subsidiary in, surprise, surprise, Saudi Arabia. But, of course, nobody talks about that. I talk about it, but with the top leadership of the FBI obviously being compromised, it raises questions about why Mr. Assad was assigned to this rinky-dink situation and taken off of following Mohammed Atta. Yet another reason, of course, may very well have to do with the fact that, as we've seen in our interviews with Daniel Hopsicker, the 9/11 hijackers, many of them anyway, infiltrated through not only some of the intelligence community's controlled drug networks, but through aviation schools associated with those drug networks. Plus, the aviation subsidiary of SECO, the Saudi investment company, the Swiss-based holding company for the fabulously wealthy and influential Bin Laden family's holdings, sent its pilots for training at Huffman Aviation. And I've also noted in For the Records 498 and 499, the SECO Spring of 2001, that in late 2000, a fellow named Baudin Dunant, who is a director of SECO, was working with others to liquidate financial entities in Switzerland associated not only with the Iran-Contra scandal, but specifically with some of these controlled drug trafficking networks. Then, in the spring of 2001, SECO opened 16 unpublished accounts with the Clearstream network owned by the Deutsche Börse, the German stock exchange. Only banks are supposed to be able to open accounts with Clearstream. These were unpublished accounts, and generally those accounts are used for moving black money, as it is said. Baudin Dunant is a protege of the aforementioned François Genoux. A really scary article appeared, courtesy of Reuters. This is one of those articles. I've gotten pretty tough over the years dealing with this stuff, but sometimes I read things, and that in combination with what I hear from various informed sources scares the you-know-what out of me, and this one scared the you-know-what out of yours truly. This is a Reuters story. It is Dateline January 13th of 2010. It's by Tim Gaynor and Timoko Diallo. It's Dateline Timbuktu, Mali, and headlined Al-Qaeda Linked to Rogue Aviation Network. And this, and some of the articles that follow, should be very carefully considered in the context of the heroic work of the aforementioned Daniel Hopsicker, who has been investigating this Rogue Aviation Network, its links to the networks through which Mohammed Atta infiltrated into the U.S. Don't forget, Mohammed Atta was largely sponsored by the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft, that we've spoken about that before. Carl Duisberg was one of the main people associated with IG Farben. And the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft, along with some of its related institutions, appear to be basically the MBA program, the point of entry for young people who want to move into the Bormann Capital Network and the economic component of the Underground Reich. Consider the following article in the context of Daniel Hopsicker's research, and I'm going to muse a little bit about it in a few minutes. In early 2008, an official at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security sent a report to his superiors detailing what he called, quote, the most significant development in the criminal exploitation of aircraft since 9/11, unquote. The document warned that a growing fleet of rogue jet aircraft was regularly crisscrossing the Atlantic Ocean. On one end of the air route, it said, are cocaine-producing areas in the Andes controlled by the leftist Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia. On the other are some of West Africa's most unstable countries. The report, a copy of which was obtained by Reuters, was ignored, and the problem has since escalated into what security officials in several countries describe as a global security threat. The clandestine fleet has grown to include twin-engine turboprops, executive jets, and retiring Boeing 727s that are flying multi-ton loads of cocaine and possibly weapons to an area in Africa where factions of Al-Qaeda are believed to be facilitating the smuggling of drugs to Europe, the officials say. Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb has been held responsible for car and suicide bombings in Algeria and Mauritania. Gunmen and bandits with links to Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, or AQIM, have also stepped up kidnappings of Europeans for ransom, who are then passed on to the AQIM factions seeking ransom payments. The aircraft hopscotch across South American countries, picking up tons of cocaine and jet fuel, officials say. They then soar across the Atlantic to West Africa and the Sahel, where the drugs are funneled across the Sahara Desert and into Europe. By the way, as we're going to note, that's disturbing. What's even more disturbing is that these jets, including Boeing 727s, then come back fully loaded. What's on them? Weapons. What might be on them at some point are weapons of mass destruction, perhaps smallish nukes. Who knows? Perhaps biggish nukes. What's going to stop those weapons of mass destruction from being used in the United States if they're coming in through these drug networks that are either protected and or ignored? Think about that one. By the way, one thing that we should mention in connection with the last article is that the late John O'Neill, who was in charge of the FBI's investigation into Al-Qaeda, charged after resigning that basically the evidentiary tributaries moved in the direction of Saudi Arabia, but that powerful American corporate interests were blocking the investigation because of those connections. Ultimately, the ultimate arbiter of power in the modern world are these giant corporations. Corporate power is what determines political reality. And that is apparently one of the reasons why John O'Neill's investigation was frustrated. He resigned and died in the 9/11 attacks. But again, as we mull through this article, as we move through this article, think about what just might come back on some of these Boeing 727s. And by the way, in some of our conversations with the heroic Daniel Hopsicker, we talked about the fact that Rudy Deckers of Huffman Aviation was learning to fly jets. So was Wolfgang Boringer, one of Mohammed Atta's German associates down in South Florida. What might be on some of these jets that have been shipping drugs to Africa and from that point for transshipment to Europe? This could very well be where the big kahuna comes into the United States. Returning again to this article, again a Reuters story, January 13, 2010, Al-Qaeda linked to Rogue Aviation Network. An examination of documents and interviews with officials in the United States and three West African nations suggest that at least 10 aircraft have been discovered using this air route since 2006. Officials warn that many of these aircraft were detected purely by chance. They cautioned that the real number involved in the networks is likely considerably higher. Alexandra Schmidt, regional representative for West and Central Africa for the UN Office on Drugs and Crime, cautioned in Dakar this week that the aviation network has expanded in the past 12 months and now likely includes several Boeing 727 aircraft. Quote, "When you have this high capacity for transporting drugs into West Africa, this means that you have the capacity to transport as well other goods. So it is definitely a threat to security anywhere in the world," unquote, says Schmidt. The other goods, unquote, officials are most worried about are weapons that militant organizations can smuggle on the jet aircraft. A Boeing 727 can handle, check this out, up to 10 tons of cargo. You think about one of those holding some nukes or dirty bombs or both or God knows what. Going off over an American city or in an American city. Think about several of those, maybe, or think about them bringing in stuff that could then be lit up in one or more American cities at the same time. Scared? Damn well should be. And, well, let's continue. The U.S. official who wrote the report for the Department of Homeland Security said the Al-Qaeda connection was unclear at the time. The official is a counter-narcotics aviation expert who asked to remain anonymous as he is not authorized to speak on the record. He said he was dismayed by the lack of attention to the matter since he wrote the report. Quote, "You've got an established terrorist connection on this side of the Atlantic. Now, on the Africa side, you have the Al-Qaeda connection, and it's extremely disturbing and a little bit mystifying that it's not one of the top priorities of the government," he said. "Since the September 11th attacks, the security system for passenger air traffic has been ratcheted up in the United States and throughout much of the rest of the world, with the latest measures imposed just weeks ago after a failed bomb attempt on a Detroit-bound plane on December 25th. Quote, "The bad guys have responded with their own aviation network that is out there every day flying loads and moving contraband," unquote, said the official, and again quoting, "And the government seems to be oblivious to it." The upshot, he said, is that militant organizations, including groups like the FARC and Al-Qaeda, have the, quote, "power to move people and material and contraband anywhere around the world with a couple of fuel stops," unquote. The lucrative drug trade is already having a deleterious impact on West African nations. Local authorities told Reuters they are increasingly outgunned and unable to stop the smugglers. And significantly, many experts say that drug trafficking is bringing in huge revenues to groups who say that they are part of Al-Qaeda. It's swelling not just their coffers, but also their ranks, they say, as drug money is becoming an effective recruiting tool in some of the world's most desperately poor regions. U.S. President Barack Obama has chided his intelligence officials, for not pooling information to connect those dots, unquote, to prevent threats from being realized. But these dots, scattered across two continents like flaring traces on a radar screen, remain largely unconnected, and the fleets themselves are still flying. The deadly cocaine trade always follows the money, and its cash-flush traffickers seek out the routes that are the most lightly policed. And, of course, lack of government interest could be due to, and something I never used to think much about, but sheer incompetence, and increasingly, the people involved at official levels in ours and our government anyway, and that an awful lot of institutions are incompetent, simply due to the fact that they have too much to do, or just the slashing of budgets brings the hiring of less competent people. And also, of course, drug money will buy a lot of silence. And also, of course, there are many compromised individuals up in the corridors of power. One air crash that may very well have been a terror incident and also may very well relate to the organized crime slash terror connection concerns the destruction of an Air France airliner off the coast of Brazil. An article in the San Francisco Chronicle of June 18, 2009 has a story about that. Jet broke up in sky. Autopsies have revealed fractures in the legs, hips, and arms of Air France disaster victims, injuries that, coupled with the large pieces of wreckage pulled from the Atlantic, strongly suggest the plane broke up in the air, experts said Wednesday in Paris. With more than 400 bits of debris recovered from the ocean surface, the top French investigator expressed optimism about discovering what brought down Flight 447, but he also called the conditions far from land in very deep waters one of the worst situations ever known in an accident investigation. A couple of very interesting people died in that crash. This is from the Sunday Herald. That's a British paper. And we find the following. This is from June 15th of 2009. Key figures in global battle against illegal arms trade lost in Air France crash. Actually, this may be the International Herald Tribune. Anyway, that will be. No, I think this is a British paper. Anyway, we find the following. This is Dateline June 15th, 2009, Dateline Argentina. Argentine campaigner Pablo Dreyfus and Swiss colleague Ronald Dreyer battled South American arms and drug trafficking. Amid the media frenzy and speculation over the disappearance of Air France's ill-fated Flight 447, the loss of two of the world's most prominent figures in the war on the illegal arms trade and international drug trafficking has been virtually overlooked. Pablo Dreyfus, a 39-year-old Argentine who was traveling with his wife Ana Carolina Rodriguez aboard the doomed flight from Rio de Janeiro to Paris, had worked tirelessly with the Brazilian authorities to stem the flow of arms and ammunition that for years has fueled the bloody turf wars waged by drug gangs in Rio's sprawling favelas. Also traveling with Dreyfus on the doomed flight was his friend and colleague Ronald Dreyer, a Swiss diplomat and coordinator of the Geneva Declaration of Armed Violence, who had worked with UN missions in El Salvador, Mozambique, Azerbaijan, Kosovo, and Angola. Of course, one of the many links of this arms trade concerns the Three Corners area in Latin America, which is a hotbed of all kinds of nasty stuff. Arms trafficking, drug trafficking, illegal documentation, slave prostitutes, and terrorism. Oh, let's not forget weapons trafficking. And in past broadcasts, we've looked at the profound links of Islamo-fascist terrorists to the criminal connections in the Three Corners area of Latin America. The Times of London had the following story by Reuters, and we're going to conclude this side with this article. This is from June 11th of 2009. Suspect names Air France flight. A French submarine with advanced sonar equipment began searching yesterday for the flight recorders of the Air France airliner that crashed into the Atlantic last week, killing all 228 passengers and crew. Meanwhile, it was claimed yesterday by the French weekly L'Express that two names on the flight's passenger list, quote, correspond to people known for links to Islamist terrorism, unquote, by French intelligence services. And so it remains to be seen just what happened to that flight. There also, by the way, a doomed passenger's camera phone recorded what appeared to be an explosion and breakup of the plane. However, that does remain to an extent food for thought and grounds for further research. Was that plane brought down because those investigators were nosing around in the Three Corners area, because they were nosing around in the terror organized crime link? Who knows? We shall see. That concludes, however, side one of For the Record program number 705, update on September 11th and related matters. This has been recorded on March 14th of the year 2010. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.